Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin or Rumble or listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks so much. We appreciate it. Hey, if you don't mind, if it's not too much to ask, if you're listening to this on some podcast app, could you give me a 5-star review if you think I've earned it? Maybe write a little note. It helps with the algorithm. I don't really care about it too much for my own personal stuff, but it helps for the show and I appreciate it. Hey, if you want to connect with me, the new website is up, macroaggressions.io. The link is down in the show notes if you need help on how to spell that. Thanks to our sponsors. They make the show happen. I'm really proud to have them on board because I like the guys and I use their products. Let's talk about Tim James and the crew over at Chemical Free Body. In a world where supplements are filled with sawdust and garbage, Chemical Free Body is there to actually make products that work. Imagine that. You can get the Green 85 drink and do that every morning like I have been doing for the last 4 years. I feel fantastic. It's really great. If you've heard of something like Athletic Greens or some, you know, a company like that, it's similar. It's green powder. You add water to it. You mix it all up and drink it in the morning. It takes you 2 minutes. It's really not too much to ask. If you want to add the detox bundle to it, please do. It goes along with the Green 85. It's 4 different sets of capsules: gut detox, toxin detox, ultra enzymes, probiotics. You take those in the morning along with your Green 85 and you're good. That's it. It's pretty easy. It'll take you 90 days to go through the program. Consider doing it. I've done it twice. I had tremendous results with it. I wasn't really, didn't know what to expect, but I lost a lot of weight and I wasn't trying to lose weight. So look, maybe it made my body more effective and efficient. I don't know. We'll see. But it made me feel good. I know that. And it actually works and it's good for you. So do this. Go to chemicalfreebody.com. Read about it. Just go read whatever you can, whatever you need to set your mind at ease. And when you're on your way checking out, the discount code is macro. That will save you some money. So go ahead and do that. The link is in the description for that. Also, EMP Shield. It's 2024. Let's see if we make it to 2025. I mean, there's talk of all kinds of nonsense going on. EMP Shield is something that can give you a little bit of peace of mind. You have a car, a home, a boat, an RV, a generator, something like that that you are concerned might become disruptive by lightning, solar flares, an EMP itself. You can add EMP Shield to your devices. It connects like a type 2 surge protector. You can install it in just a couple of minutes. There's installation videos on the website. You can have an electrician come over and knock it out for you. It's interesting. Go read up about it. Go to EMPShield.com and find out why the military was asking them about how they designed their EMP devices, because it was better than what the military had. So, hey, you know, they know something's going on, right? So the military is sniffing around. So do this. Go to EMPShield.com, read up about it, see what you think. If you find something you like, the discount code on that is also macro. And if you bundle a couple of items together at EMP Shield, I think it brings that dollar per unit down considerably. So consider checking that out. Well, I want to talk a little bit about corporate sabotage, because it's something that we don't really get into a ton, but it's been going on for a while. So there's a couple different ways to look at this. It's, you know, corporations sabotaging each other, but also the government getting involved in sabotaging corporations, the government getting involved in using corporations to sabotage foreign governments. There's a whole lot of ways that you can slice this. So when I talk about corporate sabotage, it really encompasses a broad range of items. And one of the things I want to I'm going to get into towards the tail end of this is some of the dirty tricks that the United States pulled on the Soviet Union. And you have to almost stand and applaud the level of criminality that the American government engaged in. I mean, I don't love it, but like, holy shit, if you are really in the business of destroying your enemy, what the Americans did to the Soviet Union in the 80s will stun you. I'll get to that towards the end. It's diabolical. I mean, it's really fucking bad, and really effective, and it worked. And here's the kicker: nobody knows that it was the United States government that did it. To this day, still, it's a very well kept secret. We'll get to that. And that's called a tease, by the way. That'll get you to the tail end of this episode, because it's worth sticking around for, because it is wild. But let's start with this. Listen, like the lines between corporation, big business, and the state have already been blurred, right? We understand this. This is fascism, corporatism, whatever you want to call it. It's already happening, right? So it's not like some revelation, and it's also not some new concept either. If you're a big business and the state is in charge of regulating your industry, the closer you are with the state, the better the chances are that the state regulates your industry in a way that serves you. If you can look no further than FTX for something like that, that's what they were trying to do. The government is going to regulate crypto at some point. And when it does regulate crypto, we want to have a seat at the table to be involved in how those regulations are set up. And of course, set up in a way that would benefit FTX and lock out their competition. So that's been going on for, you know, there's no secret to that. That's not anything that's new. But I think that one of the things that people don't really understand is that the role of the intelligence agencies with big business. And you might think that, you might think that the Central Intelligence Agency in the United States is this massive group that collects intelligence on behalf of the United States government. And that is correct to an extent. But you have to really kind of look back at the formation of the CIA to understand why it was started in the first place. It wasn't started as an intelligence agency for the United States government. It was started as an intelligence agency for Wall Street. Okay? I mean, that's why it came into being. Now, it's morphed over the years, and it's encompassed quite a few things. And most definitely, the CIA is deeply involved in destabilizing governments and doing all that stuff that we talk about on this show quite a bit. But its origins really were no different from the mentality that the Rothschilds had and the Rockefellers had. And, you know, you've heard this story of the Napoleon Wars and the conflicts, and the Rothschilds sent their people out in advance to go find out what the deal was. And when they found out, you know, how the war was going to turn out, they played it a certain way in the stock market. They let it leak that something else had happened, when in fact it was the exact opposite. Tanked the stock market, bought up everything for pennies on the dollar. And then when the actual news came out, then the stock market went through the roof and the Rothschilds profited immensely. So there's tremendous value in getting good information before everybody else. Okay. So that's sort of the mentality that you have to come into this with. The intelligence agencies, sure, they'll help you make sure that the Russians aren't spying on the Americans and all that stuff. But, you know, the Dulles brothers were involved in this. The Dulles brothers were Wall Street attorneys. This is the reason why this intelligence agency exists in the first place, is to gather intelligence so that the bankers can use that to make moves accordingly, right? Whether it's sell their stock sooner than they would, or buy stock in something that they might not have known to buy stock in, or they know destabilization is happening in a foreign country because they're financing it, and they can use the CIA to destabilize a Central American country so that Chiquita Bananas can go in there and start. I'm not saying the CIA destabilized for Chiquita Bananas, but you get the point. I mean, the American government has been destabilizing countries on behalf of big business for a long, long time. Smedley Butler's War is a Racket. You understand about the banana conflicts in Central America. Big business has started wars in order to get administrations out of foreign countries and get people in that will be more amenable to the dictates of their industry. If you've got a guy who's in there who's like, we're not playing your games with growing your bananas and selling them to you at a cheap price, we're not doing that. Well, then guess what? You're going to get regime changed by a bunch of spooks that are financed by the banana industry. They're going to make sure that you're out of business, or the sugar industry, or whoever, you know, you or if you want to bring it up into modern day, whoever's controlling your lithium, if you're in Chile or Peru or, you know, someplace, Bolivia, who's got natural lithium deposits. And you're like, well, we're nationalizing this. We're not selling it to the Americans. Well, guess what? If America needs it for their electric vehicle push, they're going to need access to it. And if you refuse to give them access to it, guess who's about to get some democracy dropped on their ass? You are, your administration. So this isn't anything new. You want to go back. I mean, corporate espionage has been happening for a long time. You can maybe even, oh God, I don't know. Let's just say like Tesla and Edison as a prime example, right? Nikola Tesla comes up with all these great ideas. Thomas Edison is bankrolled by the banks and the oligarchy, and you know, comes up with these ideas for different ways to generate electricity, winds up putting Tesla out of business, winds up you know, doing all these things. So it's not a new concept. It's just that there's ways to make it new for this era. So you know, regulatory agencies, like we've like the current batch of regulatory agencies, CDC, FDA, EPA, these regulatory American government regulatory agencies are already corrupt, right? There's already fascism happening there. Or I mean, again, fascism is the blending of big business with the state for the benefit of the state. And corporatism is the blending of big business with the state for the benefit of the corporation. So you ask, are we living in a fascist America or a corporatist America? The answer is a little of both, actually, because it does benefit the state in some levels, and it benefits corporations on some levels too. Like I talk about FTX, you know, FTX, you'd think, oh, we don't want to get involved with the state because they're going to regulate us. Well, they're going to regulate you either way. Do you want to be involved in setting that regulation and saying, you know, don't throw me in the briar patch? You know, you want to be the guy who's in charge of knowing which briar patch to be thrown in that has the hole in the bottom of it that you can escape down. You know, so this is where these major corporations have always had a seat at the table, whether you're the Rockefellers or you're the Carnegies or whatever. If you're going to regulate the steel industry, if you're going to create the pharmaceutical industry, you're going to want the government involved in it if you're a dirty, corrupt, big business, because you need them to lock out all of your competitors, right? And that's how you do it. The government sets up a regulation system that says, well, you have to do X, Y, and Z in order for you to participate in this, knowing full well that the corporation, the Rothschilds or whoever, the Rockefellers, Carnegies, Vanderbilt, Bill Gates, whoever, you know, the oligarchy families,
If you need them to do X, Y, and Z, they can do it. They've got the money. They've got the resources. They don't mind regulations. They want regulations. When they broke up Standard Oil into a dozen pieces, that was the best thing that could have ever happened to Standard Oil, because all those pieces then went out and became massive. And then eventually they wound up clicking back together anyway. When Microsoft was going through the antitrust case, you know, I mean, what is Microsoft now? It's a $2 trillion company. So, you know, what was going on with these antitrust cases? Were they giving them fuel to launch them into a brand new era of dominance? Because in all cases, that's sort of what happens. So I think that this mistaken belief that corporations don't want the government to regulate them, that's not true. It depends on the industry and it depends on the corporation. It depends on how entrenched you are. If you're in it really deep, the government can come in and set up a system in which only a few players are going to be allowed to meet the criteria required in order to be a player in this industry. You would be one of them. And yeah, there'll be four or five other groups that you're competing against, but you're all locked into a system that's rigged in your favor. So yeah, you have a couple competitors, but who cares? You're dividing the pie between six of you instead of 6,000 of you. So it doesn't matter in the end. And we've watched this happen. We've watched the government get involved with not just corporations, but marketplaces. We've watched them rig marketplaces such as COMEX and Forex and LIBOR. These aren't my opinions that the governments have been involved in rigging these marketplaces. They have stood trial for them and have been found guilty. The banks and the governments are deeply involved in rigging. If there's a marketplace, it's rigged. That's my default setting. Until somebody proves to me otherwise that it's not rigged, I'm just going to assume it is rigged in some form or fashion. And nothing's as rigged as the gold and silver markets. I mean, those are just straight up manipulated with paper short contracts. But again, the vast majority of people have no idea. They think that silver's worth $23 an ounce because that just must be the price of silver. No, it's being manipulated. It's always been manipulated. They cannot allow you to have an alternative to the fiat currency scam. You know, gold and silver and Bitcoin for that provide options. You know, maybe not for everybody. Maybe not everybody wants those options, but they are options. And if you're running a gigantic Ponzi scheme, which the U.S. Federal Reserve is doing, a private central bank that's not federal and not governmental, you cannot have anybody poking holes in your Ponzi scheme. You can't have anybody offering an alternative. So that's why a lot of this stuff is demonized. That's why these marketplaces are rigged. It's speculation as to why the gold and silver market is rigged. We know why it's rigged. We just don't know how long they can continue to play this game. When you run out of money, when the central banks eventually run out of money and you can't print your way through this and you can't just conjure money out of thin air to buy paper short contracts on silvers. You're betting on the price to go down. And the banks are always betting on the price to go down, and they are running fraudulent schemes in order to manipulate the price and keep it down. This isn't, again, they've been busted doing this. This isn't it's not some concept I've just thought up. This is what they do. So you find corporate sabotage and you find corporatism, you know, corporatism sabotage, I guess, if you want it, because the government is definitely involved in this. And we've seen it on a more recent scale with the relationship between the FBI and big tech. I mean, what was going on at Twitter in the Twitter files? Elvis Chan from the FBI's San Francisco office was sending birthday cards to people at Twitter. He was on such a close relationship with them that he knew when their birthdays were and was making sure to show that respect. What about the role of the Obama White House with Facebook? There's a pipeline of people that have come. I mean, I think the number's over 20 or over 20 of them, somewhere between 20 and 30 people from the Obama White House have gone directly to work for Facebook. That's weird, right? Boy, if I didn't know any better, I'd think that there was some fuckery afoot. I mean, when Mark Zuckerberg goes out and decides he's going to fortify the elections, He's going to spend $500 million on helping to make sure that the elections are, there's election integrity. And yet you've just taken two busloads of people from the Obama White House and put them into your Facebook office in high-ranking positions, and you're going to be in charge of election integrity? Get the fuck out of here with that. That's nonsense. It's just so we've seen American government agencies sabotage society in general by allowing dangerous products to be sold. How about fluoride added to the water? I'm going to have Derek Bros back here pretty soon to talk about the fluoride lawsuit. What about, you knowingly sold that to the public? What about allowing things like DDT to be made and sold? The DDT has been, in retrospect, one of the biggest contributors to the rise of polio. Bet most people didn't know that, right? We've got Paraquat, right? We've got Roundup. We've got atrazine. We've got asbestos. We've got lead paint. All these things are legal. All of these things were legal by the United States government, until they started killing people. Or lowering your IQ, like fluoride and lead paint. And then you get the very Rumsfeldian mistakes were made, sort of like, we didn't know about lead paint back then. We didn't know about fluoride back then. Yeah, you did. Of course you did. You didn't add fluoride to the water for our benefit. You added it to dumb down the population. In fact, the United States government learned to add fluoride to the water by the Operation Paperclip Nazi scientists that they brought over. They said, why aren't you guys putting fluoride in the water? And they're like, what are you talking about? And they're like, that's how we did it to keep the population dumb and compliant in Germany. And they're like, what? Really? And they're like, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. You have to add fluoride to the water. It'll keep everyone docile. So again, this isn't an accident. This is coordinated. This is made to happen. This is done on purpose. It's no surprise. I mean, it's as much of surprise as when you find out that Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas has voted every single time that Monsanto issues have come up to the Supreme Court. He's voted in favor of Monsanto. Do you know why that is? Because he was the lead counsel for Monsanto. I mean, this is how it works, right? This is not some sort of like conspiracy theory. This is conspiracy analysis. This is why these people are on the Supreme Court. They fill a very specific need. You think Monsanto didn't want their guy to be on the Supreme Court? Of course they want their guy on the Supreme Court. Of course, especially when you know that you're making poisons that are killing people and that it's going to eventually wind up in the Supreme Court. You most definitely want to have one of your guys there. I mean, if you're Raytheon and you've got a guy from your board of directors, General Lloyd Austin, General Raytheon, you think you don't want him to become Secretary of Defense? Of course you do, because he's going to make decisions, put in place policy that's going to create instability all over the world and justify the need for Raytheon to make more bombs or more guidance, targeting guidance for its laser weapons or whatever the fuck they're making, whatever. So it pays to have these people in positions of power. We watched that with the tobacco industry. The tobacco industry operated for 50 years with impunity, hiring scientists. 4 out of 5 doctors say lucky strikes are the smoothest smoke you can get. I remember my mom told me that she was so stressed out when she was pregnant with me that her doctor instructed her to go home and smoke cigarettes. I'm pretty sure that's bad advice. I'm almost positive you're not supposed to do that, but whatever. Anyway, let's talk about some state-sanctioned sabotage. And these, we're going to start with two events that are both tied to the dirtiest country in Europe, which is, of course, Ukraine. And the first event I'm going to talk about, you know about, Nord Stream. The second event I'm going to talk about is one that you don't know about, I guarantee you. And it's worth knowing about too, because when you hear what's gone on, you're going to be mortified.
But let's start with the Nord Stream pipeline. Pipelines 1 and 2, if you don't remember them, they run from Russia and they go through the Baltic and they connect in Germany and they connect and they run through Norwegian territory and anyway, they're underwater pipelines and they just up and blew up for no good reason, don't you know? I'm sure Russia, the first story was that Russia blew up their own pipelines, which is a lie that is so obviously dumb that I can't even believe that the mainstream media tried to spin it. But they did because they're pathological liars and that's what they do. But even by their standards, it was a whopper. And so what we know about this is that Russia didn't blow up their own pipeline. That would make no sense. The American Empire blew up the pipeline in conjunction with the Norwegians, in conjunction. So the CIA and Norway planned it. I know they tried to give Ukraine credit for it. Ukraine didn't do it. Ukraine wanted it done, for sure, but they didn't have the technological know-how to do that. They also weren't running the drills that were happening out in the Baltic at the time, but America was. So I'm sure it was an elite military dive crew that set the charges. I mean, we do know that the Navy SEALs exist. I'm not sure if they were the actual ones that were used for it. You know, the CIA planned it. We're starting to get phone calls that are intercepted where you're starting to hear Germany talking about plotting to blow up the Crimean Bridge. And that was put out recently with kind of a bad look for the Germans to get caught plotting and planning that, because, you know, when Germany starts attacking Russian infrastructure, that draws NATO in. So it's one thing if Ukraine is doing it and Ukraine is involved in it, but, you know, they're just like a sock puppet that's got America's fingers up its ass and Germany's fingers up there as well. And they're making it look like it's Ukraine, but in actuality, it's the American Empire and NATO. And, but here's the thing. When you blow up the pipeline, you really rat fuck the Germans on this one too, because 55% of Germany's gas comes from Russia and it was pretty cheap. Was past tense, pretty cheap. It's not cheap anymore. Now they have to buy LNG from the United States at a much higher price. Funny how that happens, right? Yeah. So I think secretly, maybe not even really so secretly, but I think that America is a bad friend to Europe. And I think that America, yes, they would like for Ukraine to stand up to Russia, and they would like for the big Russian bear to be tamed, and they're going to do what they can to have Ukraine do all that stuff. But they also understand that Ukraine's getting its ass kicked in this war, and that it's not going to be going on for much longer. So America also has a secondary goal, which is, let's also make sure that we weaken Germany while we're at it. So I ask you, if America set out to weaken Germany, could they do it any better than they're doing right now, destroying their ability to purchase cheap energy from Russia? Well, that's gone. What about now that I wouldn't be surprised if the CIA was involved in leaking the German messages to the Russians somehow. I'm speculating on that, and maybe Russia has the capability to do it, but America wouldn't protect Germany on that. They'd sell them out for sure. Make it look like they did it. You know, make it look like make Germany a big target too, because America wants to destabilize everybody. In this idea that, like, oh, Western Europe is on our team and we're team NATO and everything. Yeah, until we're not. You know, if you're counting on America's loyalty, you're crazy, man. But it crippled Germany's industrial capacity in order to make sure that Germany never rises up. And it's working quite well, I would say. And look, when you agree to blow up the Nord Stream pipeline, that's a decision that goes all the way to the president of the United States. So any idea, and I know Joe Biden's not really in control of anything, but the group that is behind him, the O'Biden administration, as Mel Kay likes to call it, with Susan Rice and these trilaterals and Obama and all of all these war hawks, the Valerie Newlands of the world, all these lunatic psychopaths that are trying to kickstart World War III. They're the ones that are making the decisions on this. They're the ones that sign off on the Nord Stream pipeline being blown up. I mean, hell, Victoria Nuland, she said they were going to blow it up. Joe Biden said they were going to blow it up on video, both times on video. And then it blew up. I'm sure it was just a leak, right? So that's America using state-sanctioned sabotage to hit its enemies. And it's always targeting Russia, you know, in one way or another. They always want to target Russia. But here's the second event that I said that you weren't going to realize was what it was. I want to take you back to 1986. Also, Ukraine, to the Chernobyl nuclear power plant. Do you remember that? A lot of you might have been a little too young for it. I was 14 at the time. I remember it blowing up. There was a nuclear reactor problem, explosion in Chernobyl, Ukraine, and it was a huge mess. And it cost the Ukrainians, now mind you, this is 1986, so the Soviet Union is still intact, and Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union here. So this is an attack on, I mean, it was just a random coincidental mistake of bad luck that hit this nuclear power plant. Or was it? I hate to break it to you, but it wasn't an accident. It was the CIA. The CIA, surprise, the CIA was responsible for blowing up the Chernobyl nuclear power plant. And I'll tell you exactly how they did it. CIA Director William Casey and National Security Counsel Gus Weiss allowed for, this is when I say evil genius, you have to sort of stand in appreciation for how diabolical these people are. But this is how they did it. They allowed the Soviets to steal microchips from a compromised source. They knew the Soviets were going to steal these microchips. They knew it. They had intel that they were looking for them, and they knew that what they did was they compromised some microchips and put them in a place where the Soviet Union would find them and steal them. And they did. And the Soviets did that. And these chips were set up a specific way. They were set to run for 10 million cycles, run like normal for 10 million cycles. You wouldn't notice anything about it. You could get a power plant up and running. You could build one. You could design one around it. You could put it in. You could start it. You could test it. You could get it up and running. You could get it generating power, and it would generate power, and it would go and go and go and go, and it works. 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 And it works for 10 million cycles. And then once it hits that threshold, it then drops into a different mode. It doesn't stop working, doesn't explode or do anything like that. It's just that after 10 million cycles, it then changes. And what it started doing at that point was then it started sending false signals to the control room, and the chips would then go on a different mission. It would start doing something different. Now, here's the interesting thing. The Russians in 1985, a full year before this, they figured out that their technology had been compromised throughout their country. They weren't sure how it was being done. And here's the worst part for them. They weren't sure what was compromised. They just knew that their technology was compromised somewhere. And so they desperately started looking for what it was. How are they getting us? We know they're getting us. We know we've walked into a trap. The Russians figured out they've walked into a trap in 1985. The problem is the trap hadn't gone off yet. It hadn't sprung. And so they weren't really sure. They just realized, it's like, you know, you walk in and the door closes behind you and it locks and you go, fuck, I'm in here. Now what do I do? That was the situation the Russians were in 1985. They didn't know what technology was good and what technology was bad. And in 1986, that chip, those computer chips hit the 10 million cycle threshold. They dropped into a brand new mode, started sending false signals to the control panel that everything was cool and everything wasn't cool. And they revved that thing up and they blew it up. It blew the whole thing up. And here's the interesting part. Nobody knew. Nobody knew what it was. It appeared to be an actual technical mistake, like an honest mistake. It appeared to be. Because it wasn't like they bought the chip the week before, installed it, and then everything blew up. Everything was working fine for years. That's the real devious part of this trap, is that you'd look around thinking, well, what have we had problems with? You know, well, this seems to be running fine. What about this? Well, that industry, what about our airplanes? Are our airplanes falling out of the sky? No, they seem good. What about our nuclear power plants? Are they working? No, they've been working fine. They've been working for a few years. Where is this shit? We know it's somewhere. Boom. Here's a quote from Mikhail Gorbachev. The nuclear meltdown at Chernobyl 20 years ago this month, even more than my launch of Perestroika, was perhaps the real cause of the collapse of the Soviet Union 5 years later. CIA took down the Soviet Union with Chernobyl. Pretty interesting, huh? But it didn't stop there. Here's the reason why the Russians knew that there was a problem with the technology. Chernobyl was the second infrastructure-related project that the Soviets had that went kablooey on them. The first one was the Trans-Siberian Pipeline. Trans-Siberian Pipeline? No. And this pipeline was another victim of a CIA Trojan horse that just adjusted the pressure incorrectly. And then in this pipeline, and wound up blowing the thing up in a 3-kiloton explosion. It's like a nuclear explosion going off with what they did. This happened in 1982, and the CIA did kind of like the same thing. They allowed, again, the Soviets were stealing all kinds of shit, right? So they knew that they were looking for pipeline software. They you know, if you can't make it yourself, go steal it, right? You're the Soviet Union. You don't have any sort of moral hangup about something like that. So they go out and they start looking around for this pipeline software, and they find it at a Canadian company. Now, this Canadian company had been approached in advance by the Reagan White House and had been set up in a way that they allowed the Soviets to steal this software. Same thing that happened with Chernobyl, right? But Chernobyl was 4 years later. This was the first go around. The first go around was the Trans-Siberian Pipeline. And so the Soviets steal this software from a Canadian company and use it to build their Trans-Siberian Pipeline that's moving oil across the Arctic, and it's doing all this stuff, and it works like a charm, and it's working great, and it's working great, and nothing is a problem. Until the software sends the wrong signal intentionally after it gets into a same sort of situation, drops into a new cycle, and starts to ramp up the pressure, and eventually it blows itself up. Now, once that happened, the Russians knew, okay, we didn't do this. Like, we, the Russians, we didn't do this to ourselves. It wasn't a mistake. It's got to be that software that we stole. Someone must have monkeyed with that software. But here's the problem. They'd stolen so much stuff over the years and installed it in their economy and in their infrastructure that they didn't really know where to look. Like, is it this software? Is it that? We stole that. Could be that. That could be going off next. So that's why it took them 3 years to figure it out. In 85, they figured it out. Okay, well, our stuff has been compromised. The question is, what else has been compromised? Hopefully it's just this Trans-Siberian Pipeline. I mean, hope, fingers crossed that it's just that. And then a year later, Chernobyl blows up. And then you have Mikhail Gorbachev saying that was maybe the most important thing that ended the Soviet Union. So look, it's not just Russia, but Iran too, you know, Israel, if you remember, Israel targeted Iran's centrifuges with Stuxnet. That's a compromising software program that the Israelis, Israelis are also big at stealing software. They like to steal software from the Americans and then sell it to the Chinese because they're traitors to, I mean, they're not allies to the American empire. Israel is their own fiefdom, their own empire. So you can't trust them with your technology at all. Also, they have Unit 8200, and they encourage people from Unit 8200 to leave and go start their own tech companies to get involved in the compromising of software too. So the Israelis have been doing this for a while. And if you remember that centrifuge problem, it was the same thing. It's like all of a sudden Iran centrifuges start malfunctioning and then they explode, right? That was Stuxnet. That was a computer software issue. That was Israel instead of America. But, you know, I mean, it's insert your psychopathic Western allied state here, you know, whether it's the US empire doing shit like this or the British or the Israelis or whoever, you know. Also, on sort of a side note, since we're talking about nuclear fuckery and Israel, there is a belief out there, and I will say it's a belief because at this current moment, I don't have the documentation to prove it. But there is a belief out there that the Fukushima earthquake was not as organic as people are led to believe, and that that was retribution, payback for voting against Israel at a United Nations meeting. So, again, we're in speculationville here with that one. Educated guesses. And I'll have to dig into a little bit more about that. But since we're talking about blowing up nuclear facilities with through covert means and making it look like something else, you never want to get busted being the guy that's blowing up a nuclear facility because that looks bad. But if you can get that nuclear facility to blow itself up and then just throw your hands up and go, hey, it wasn't me, man. I mean, maybe you guys should have built it better or whatever. Then you've got plausible deniability and you don't look like somebody that's trying to create, I don't know, nuclear fallout and level an entire area. You know, that's a bad look. So, you know, don't expect anybody to take credit for these things. Don't expect, well, the Americans did take credit. Ultimately, William Casey kind of took credit for blowing up Chernobyl. But, I don't expect the Israelis to ever claim Fukushima if they were in fact behind it. And I think that it's reasonable. You know, look, their Unit 8200 is building digital time bombs. You know, that programs that have to be inserted into code to destroy lists or to destroy databases. And it, what we learned from the Vault 7 dump from the CIA was that some of these tech services, some of these backdoors are set up in a way so that the virus installs itself, does what it needs to do, and then uninstalls itself on its way out after it's finished with its mission. So it's kind of hard to tell that it was even there. And they can delete information off of your computer. Of course, they could delete lists and databases, copy them, compromise them, take some people's names off, put other people's names on, things like that. So the level of sophistication with regard to what can be done remotely from a technological standpoint, who knows? Honestly, expect the worst. I mean, when we did that Vault 7 episode, it was like one scary thing after another, and that was dating back to 2016. So, you know, we're full 8 years past that, and given how technology advances, who knows what's going on. So again, we're talking about Trans-Siberian pipelines. We're talking about Chernobyl. This is stuff that happened 36 to 40 years ago. So you've got to expect that this idea, this concept, this strategy didn't go away. It just got better, more refined. So, one of the things that's sort of an interesting, let's stick with this just since I let's stick with Israel since we mentioned them. When it comes to computer programs that are building backdoors and giving people access to it, I mean, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the InsLaw program, the Promise software, Danny Casolaro writing about that. This was the massive backdoors that were built into the software programs that were used to schedule and set up court hearings. It was courtroom software that was being compromised by the Israelis. Danny Casolaro wrote about it. A lot of people have written about it. It was a huge blackmail and intel gathering program. Look, when you know what's going on behind the scenes with court cases that haven't been made public yet, and you know who's going to be testifying, who's not going to be testifying, somebody shows up on some court case that's going to impact you. If you're Israel, as an example, because they're the ones that were deeply involved in this, though I would suggest it's not limited to their, it wasn't just Israel using this software, but they were the ones that were involved in it. If you've got some massive court case that's coming up with one of your guys that's involved, you would like to know who's testifying against them so that those people can blow up in a plane. You would like to know what they've got and what they don't have. You know, you'd like to know more information. And this was a fantastic intel gathering program. And of course, it was used to, when you've got information, that information can be used a variety of ways, including to blackmail people or to get people thrown off of the case or to get people thrown out of helicopters or to get people thrown out of the back of 727s like Jeffrey Epstein flew around with, one that allows you to deploy the staircase as long as you're below 10,000 feet. So again, a lot of problems go missing out of the back of these airplanes, and a lot of problems get sorted out through the back doors in these programs. And Israel has been deeply involved in that. Vault 7 shows that. We know what's going on with the Unit 8200. None of this stuff is a secret. I would suggest that Beirut port explosion in 2020 that killed 218 people and injured 7,000 others was probably Israel that did that. That's what they do. Very covert. Doesn't get talked about on the nightly news, but it creates massive problems, infrastructure problems. Biggest port in Lebanon gets blown to smithereens. And they said there was too much ammonium nitrate. And why would you be storing all that there? I'm sorry, that's just not an answer that I'm willing to accept. So America might have been the best at this in the 80s, but I think that the Israelis probably are the best at it now. I don't know. Who knows? It's not, we're not keeping, they're not giving out gold medals, silver medals, or bronze medals. But if they were, the American Empire and the Israelis and the British would be on the podium. Because this is what they do. They use these very devious forms of sabotage on an industrial scale to take out their enemies in covert ways. Not necessarily to kill all of their enemies, but to just throw a monkey wrench into their economy, into their infrastructure, into their ports, into their rail systems, into their power systems. I mean, blowing up a nuclear power plant in Ukraine sends a variety of messages, of course, you know. So it's very effective. But if you want to talk about some interest, some sort of like a, I guess, fun, if we want to talk about fun corporate espionage, corporate sabotage, here's an interesting thing that happened back in World War II. If you recall, the Germans took over France pretty early on in the war. Vichy French government and all those things were happening. And one of the things that the Germans did was they took over some of the manufacturing there, including the French car company Renault. And they made the French continue to build Renault trucks because the Germans needed them, right? So they basically like had them building out, you know, we're going to take over France and we're going to take over your factories here, but you're still going to make these trucks for us. You're still going to work. It's just that you're not selling these trucks to the French people. We're taking them for the German war machine. And one of the things, this is brilliant. This is one of these little tiny things that the administration, the engineers at Renault did that was absolutely brilliant and totally unnoticeable until after the war when it was reported that this is what they were doing. They didn't change anything in the trucks except for one item. What they did, you know, when you're putting oil in your car, you have a dipstick that comes out and there's a fill line on that. There's a line that shows you if that is covered in oil, then you're good. If it drops below that fill line, you should probably add more oil. The French changed the fill line on the dipstick. That's all they did. They made it lower. So it always looked like it was covered in oil when the trucks were actually running out of oil. So all of the German trucks that they took from the French, from the Renault factory, all their engines burned out because they weren't getting the oil put in soon enough. They were looking at the dipstick. They were saying, looks good to me, put it back in, drive another 1,000 miles or whatever. And those engines were melting because they just didn't have the oil in it. That is genius. That is amazing. That I can get on board with. Let's wrap up by talking about some of the domestic corporate sabotage. There's been a lot. And I'm not even going to talk about like too much of the old timey stuff. Well, maybe I'll talk a little bit about it, but okay. This is about as far back as I'll go in terms of old-timey stuff. We'll go back to the mid-90s with Clinton and just say that NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, destroyed American manufacturing. That was the equivalent of changing the dipstick line on the oil tanks of the trucks, okay? Because what that did was that took a while, didn't happen right away, but it gutted the manufacturing capacity of the United States over the course of the next 3 decades. And that's where we are now, where you have no manufacturing in the Midwest of the United States in the area they would call the Rust Belt. That stuff's just up and gone. All those companies, the 50,000 manufacturing facilities that have been outsourced to China and to Mexico and elsewhere, that is domestic corporate sabotage by the Clinton administration. But of course, you shouldn't be surprised because Bill Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar, which means that he was a Fabian socialist, which means that he's a wolf in sheep's clothing who was sent to destroy America from the inside on behalf of the British Empire. And he did a great job of it. Because if you were thinking about how you would destroy the manufacturing capacity of the United States, you couldn't do it any better than Bill Clinton did with NAFTA. That's because that's his mission. He's a destroyer. Bill Clinton and his entire family should be hanging from light poles in the town square for what they've done. Let's stick with his piece of shit wife, Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, selling 20% of the United States' uranium deposits to Uranium One, a Canadian company using Russian money. I thought Vladimir Putin loved Donald Trump. I thought Donald Trump was a Putin puppet. Who signed off on the deal for Putin to acquire for Russian backed money to acquire this? One person needed to sign off on it. It was the Secretary of State of the United States of America needed to be the one to authorize this in order for 20% of the United States uranium to be sold and leave this country. The person that signed off on that was Hillary Clinton. Period. End of story. Not debatable. We've got Bill Gates buying up farms. We've got the Chinese buying up farms. What's going on? We have the Palestine, Ohio train derailment. Remember that? The train derails. It's filled with chemicals. The chemicals spill all over the place. The first thing that the responding officers do when they get there, not the police, but the feds, is they immediately light it all on fire because that's a great idea. You want to clean up this spill that just came out of it? Nah, let's light it on fire instead. Make sure that all of it goes into the air and then destroys the water, destroys the animals, makes everybody in the region sick, cuts down on this, you know, the train, this will be out of commission for months. Great job. Fantastic. Flint, Michigan, water treatment facility. Do you have clean water in Flint, Michigan? I remember seeing
our Lord and Savior, Chocolate Jesus, Barack Obama, drink a glass of water from Flint, Michigan.
I mean, I saw him fake glass, drink a glass of water, you know? I saw that.
Does Flint, Michigan have clean water? Yes or no? The answer is no. Why are the farms catching on fire all over the United States? Why? We had 100,000 hens die at a farm in Pennsylvania. We had a chocolate factory explosion in Pennsylvania. We had a dairy farm in Texas go up in flames and kill 18,000 cows. We currently have 1 million acres in North Texas that are on fire. Questions about the nature of that fire. We have Maui getting hit with directed energy weapons. Big questions about those fires as well. Questions about the aftermath of those fires. Nobody's allowed to get in there and see anything. By the way, shout out to Craig Pasta-Jardula. He's been on the ground in Maui on a couple different occasions. He's putting out videos. Go find, I think on YouTube or maybe it's Rumble, maybe both, Pasta2Go, number two, Pasta2Go. Go check out his work and support him. He's doing great work on Maui. Food processing facilities are exploding when they're not getting hit by airplanes. You remember that? So who's behind all this? Really, that's sort of the ultimate question. I mean, it's undeniable that these things are happening in a coordinated effort. The farms are being taken over. The seed vault in Norway has been built where all the organic seeds have been stored away. That's Syngenta, Rockefeller Foundation, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and the Norwegian government. Same Norwegian government that plotted with the CIA to blow up Nord Stream, by the way. They've squirreled away all of the seeds in this seed vault, 1,100 miles south of the Arctic, or of the south of the North Pole in the Arctic Circle. So that's happening. Factory farms are blowing up. Farmland's being acquired at a massive rate by Bill Gates and the Chinese and others. And we're just supposed to pretend like this isn't happening. And we're just supposed to pretend like this is all a massive coincidence. It's that quote from the movie The Firm. And I think about this all the time. Wilford Brimley's character, the head of security for that law firm. He's in a scene with Gene Hackman. And Gene Hackman's like, what is your problem? Says the guy, like, why are you up my ass? What is your problem? And Wilford Brimley's character, who is a hard ass in that, just looks at him and he says, I get paid to be suspicious when I've got nothing to be suspicious about. Well, look, I think we have plenty to be suspicious about here. And I'm going to tell you who's behind it. Because you need to know how these people think about you and what's going on in this country, in the United States. I can't speak for the rest of the world, but with regard to the United States, as far as what is happening here with these, with this sabotage, the people that are responsible for doing this are the wealthy, woke, well-educated coastal elite. The people that you'd find on the East Coast and the West Coast. The big city folks, New York, Philly, Washington, D.C., Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle. You know, the big cities with all of the Soros-installed district attorneys, all the hardcore left places, the Democrat-run shitholes. The reason why I say that they're behind this, and I'm not trying to say that some guy in a pinstripe suit is out there putting explosives on the track, twirling his mustache, right? But it is an ideology. First of all, they despise middle America. They have no respect for the Americans. They call it flyover country. And that is a pejorative term that's used to describe when you fly from Los Angeles to New York, you fly over all this stuff. Nobody goes there. You fly over it to get to somewhere else. This is flyover country. Those people don't matter. Those people are predominantly Republican, conservative, red state leaning. Not all, but most of them are. And the Democratic elite, they consider themselves to be elite because they're overeducated and they make money. So they think that they're better than everybody else. Their ideas are stupid and nonsensical and
and vicious and anti-human and all these things. Why they think they're somehow better than everybody is beyond me, but they do believe that. And it's an ideology. It is that the people in Middle America deserve what we're doing to them. And they did a survey recently talking to a lot of these coastal elites. And this is what I want to talk to you about. We'll wrap up with this because it's terrifying. The way they think about the world is when you understand the way they see the world, a lot of this stuff starts to make more sense to you. So 69% of them, we'll round up, we'll just say 70, 7 out of 10 of the people that they've talked to believe that there is too much freedom in America. Too much. Now, I've lived in America my entire life. I've been all over the world, luckily, but I've been based in America. And I have watched the freedoms that we have turn into privileges, licenses, you know, anything but actual freedom. It's very subjective. And it's very much easy to remove, you know, all of your rights are hall passes that can be revoked whenever the government decides that they want to. That's the mentality that they have. And over the course of my lifetime, our freedoms have all left. They've all gone to like Ukraine and they've gone to, you know, all these other countries. It's funny how they just leave. They've gone to the Middle East a lot. But what has remained has been a removal of freedoms in the United States. And these people still believe, 7 out of 10 of them think, that there's too much freedom in the United States still. They would like to remove that from you. Now, almost the same number, this is actually 70%, 70% say that they trust the government to do the right thing most of the time. I simply cannot understand how they would come to that conclusion. You trust the American government to do the right thing most of the time? What are you talking about? I trust the government to do the wrong thing most of the time. In fact, if I were a betting man, I would bet all of my money every single time on the government doing the wrong thing. When the government does the right thing, it's only the right thing either coincidentally, or you just happen to be in alignment with the thinking that they have at the time. You may accidentally benefit from the fact that they're trying to hook up their buddies with something. You may get it. It may benefit you, not because they're looking out for you, but you just happen to have interests that align with their corporate donors or something. But you, the general public, you in the flyover states, now, mind you, these people don't live in the flyover states. These people live in New York City, in Washington, D.C., in Boston, in Chicago, in Los Angeles. And I lived in Los Angeles for 25 years. I know who these people are. I've lived among them, worked with them. And I never considered myself to be Republican or Democrat. I was never on either of these sides. But I know these people. I know this mentality. These are the people. Okay, $150,000is the minimum that they make. So they're in at a minimum of $150,000. The institutions that they attended, according to this survey, Harvard, Yale, University of Pennsylvania, Northwestern, Johns Hopkins, Columbia, Stanford, Berkeley, Princeton, Cornell, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, otherwise known as MIT, and the University of Chicago. These are Ivy League schools, not all of them, mostly Ivy League schools, deep state schools. And these are the people that trust the government. Part of the reason why they trust the government is because they work with the government and they go into government. And high-level sections, you know, the people that are actually running sort of the big businesses and the big industries and the intelligence agencies and all of this. These are people that come straight out of these groups. They come out of these universities, Harvard, Yale, MIT, University of Chicago, Cornell. I mean, these are feeder schools right into Wall Street and Washington, D.C. So I'm probably not, I mean, I guess I shouldn't be too surprised that 70% of these people think that the government does the right thing most of the time. These are also the people that are fully vaccinated and boosted. So you trust the government at your own peril. You trust Big Pharma? Go inject yourself. Go take another booster shot, dummy. I've got news for you. The unvaccinated aren't dying. Sorry, you'll be the last to figure that out. We warned you. You told us we were crazy. You said that we should be cast away from society. But I want you to understand this. This is the mentality. This survey goes on, and it's a real peek behind the curtain to see how these people think about you and me when we're not around. 77% of the people surveyed say that they want restrictions on gasoline, meat, and electricity. 77%. That's 7 out of every 9 people they talk to said that they want you to be restricted on your electricity and gasoline and your meat and what you can and can't eat. 77%, not 7%, 77%. When can you get 77% of people to agree on anything? It's very difficult. 72% of these people said that they wanted to ban gasoline vehicles. They want to get rid of them. They don't want the poorers to have gasoline vehicles. They want electric vehicles, which are way more expensive. Well, when you have to change out your electric car battery in the next, let's say maybe you've had the car for 3 years and everything's great. Well, let's talk in 4 more years when your battery goes. And then they say, well, you need a new battery, buddy, for your fancy EV here. And they go, oh, okay, well, yeah, I used to get new batteries for my old car before. What's that, like $300? And they go, no, that's going to be $26,000 for a new battery for your electric vehicle. Uh-oh. I guess it wouldn't matter if you're super rich. You could probably just go out and do it. But just so you know, 72% of these people want to make sure that you don't have a gasoline-powered car. You know, because of climate change, of course. It's so funny. Coastal elites, they're so elite. They go to all these high, very fancy schools. I have a college degree from a top 25 university too. Funny, I didn't get indoctrinated and brainwashed into this woke bullshit. You go to Harvard, you think, oh, I want to go to Harvard. I'm super smart. Do you think that global warming is real? Oh yeah, absolutely. It's real. Well, how smart are you then? 69% of the people surveyed want to ban gas stoves. Again, 7 out of 10 people in the room want to get rid of gas stoves. You know what the follow-up question should be? How many people in this survey have a gas stove at home? My guess, 100%. Nobody likes cooking with electric. 58% of the people surveyed say they want to ban SUVs. Again, this is not a survey where they're asking, would you want to buy an SUV, yes or no? And the answer is no, I wouldn't want to buy an SUV. That's not the question. The question is, do you think that we should make it so that everybody else is prohibited from buying an SUV? And 58% of the people said yes. We have to make sure that they cannot buy an SUV. 70% said you can't buy a gas stove. 72% said you have to ban gas vehicles. 77% said that they want, not I'm not going to eat meat or I'm not going to use electricity or I'm going to cut back on my, no, they're not going to do any of that shit. They're going to do whatever they want. They want you to not have this. 55% of the coastal elite that were surveyed said that they want a ban on non-essential air travel. They don't want you getting on an airplane. They're going to get on an airplane. Have you, again, the follow-up question. You want to ban, 55% ban essential air travel, non-essential air travel, sorry. Okay, follow-up question. In the last 12 months, have you indulged in non-essential air travel? Yes or no? You know what my guess is? My guess is that number is close to 95% have. And last on the list, 53% of the people surveyed want to ban air conditioning for you, not them. So when I talk about corporate sabotage, it's not limited to governments and it's not limited to corporations. These people, these coastal elites, and the term elite is in air quotes, of course, they hate your guts. They think you're stupid. They think that you, especially if you're a Christian, I'm not religious one way or the other, but if you are a Christian, then they really think you're stupid, and they have no respect for you. And because they think you're stupid, they think you live in a part of the country that nobody goes to because they don't go there. Because you didn't go to a fancy school that they went to, they have thoughts on how they want you to live. Now, not that they're going to ever interact with you, because if you're in flyover country, they're never going to see you anyway. But for some reason, these woke assholes feel the need to want to control your life. They're desperate to control your life. So when you see trains blowing up, when you see food processing facilities blowing up, when you see 100,000 hens dying in a farm in Pennsylvania, 18,000 cows dying in Texas, and then you run a survey and you find that 7 out of 9 people surveyed want restrictions on meat and gasoline and electricity, doesn't it stand to reason that maybe these people are part of the group that's making it happen? I mean, that's the ideology that they have. I think that we make an assumption that the person that is, that the saboteur in this scenario is dressed up in camouflage with his face painted black and he's out in the middle of the night doing all this stuff. I don't think that's really the case. I think that these saboteurs are wearing $3,000 suits. And I think that if you really boil it down, these people, these coastal elites, they influence the government to such a degree that they drive actual policy inside the United States. And if you're somebody that spent a lot of time in Washington, D.C., you come out of that with a very warped view on reality and who you answer to and who you're dealing with lobbyists all day long, dealing with CEOs all day long. You're not dealing with the guy running a small farm in Nebraska. You're not dealing with those people. You're interacting with the coastal elite, and they believe some very dangerous things. Hey, controlled demolition, baby, right on schedule. If you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. If you want to connect with me, the new website, macroaggressions.io. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.